Hi, I'm Kerry Lee Pascal, the executive head of Zawani. At Zawani, we organize quarterly virtual events called At the Lake, where we engage in discussions on challenging topics with a panel of experienced industry leaders. Recently, we delved into the topic of empowering women in the African entrepreneurial space. The audience had an abundance of questions, but due to time constraints, our panel couldn't address all of them during the event. Consequently, we decided to reconnect with our panel members to gather their responses to the remaining questions. We've already had a conversation with Dr. Irene Bunder, and today we'll catch up with Sylvia Kitanji, partner and head of corporate and commercial at Ashitiva Associates in Kenya. Sylvia Kitanji is a legal professional with 13 years' experience practicing law in Kenya. Sylvia is a partner and the head of corporate and commercial law at Ashitiva Associates LLP, a leading corporate and commercial law firm in Kenya. She is part of the leadership team at Ashitiva and has been a critical part of Ashitiva's journey in creating an impact-driven business. She leads a team of lawyers to offer valued services to a broad range of clients, including government, development finance institutions, social impact enterprises, not-for-profit organizations, private equity funds, venture capital funds, hedge funds, microfinance institutions, and multinational corporations.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Sylvia, it is an absolute honor to have you with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Kerry. Glad to be here today.
Great. So Sylvia, maybe just before we jump into our first questions, do you want to give just a little bit of your heart? Tell us a little bit about just why this topic is something that you are passionate about.
Thank you, Kerry. Happy to. So during the initial conversation around this issue, I mentioned that it wasn't on my mind. The issue of women at the workplace, the role of women in society was not necessarily on my mind. And I didn't pay much attention to it, not necessarily to discount it, but I grew up thinking that I should not use my gender as a crutch or an excuse and went through life in that way. And so, of course, years of experience taught me it's not that simple. It's not that simplistic. I believe I'm in this world as a woman by divine ordinance, so to speak. I was meant to be a woman in this world. And two, there is a place for both men and women in this world. And only until I had certain experiences, that's when I got that consciousness around women and their place in society, their place in within the kingdom, their place in the marketplace, and recognizing that the woman has this uniqueness about them, about myself, the same way men have their own uniqueness, then that consciousness came to light. And having that uniqueness means two things. It means that there are things that, as a woman, for you and I, Kerry, that are going on, would go for us. But also at the same time, the things that don't work for women, and it's due to various complex issues, unconscious bias, cultural issues, conditioning over years, etc. And the only way to change that is with consciousness, and it starts with everybody at an individual level. It does not start with policy. It does not start at a system level, but it starts with you and I, and with the people that we live with every day.
That's so good. I love that word, consciousness. Because it is something. I mean, I love what you said, where you didn't want to use your gender as a crutch. And you were like, I'm not going to let this dictate who I am, or let it be something that I use. But then started to actually experience some of why the conversation exists. And definitely not to use it as something as an excuse, but actually realizing that it is a conversation that is relevant for people, and it is part of the challenge that people face. So I wanted to ask you, and it's sort of, I'm going to ask you three parts, and they sort of interconnected with one another in the next question. In the last conversation at the lake, you said that the women issue, as you quoted it, was shouldn't be mainstream. But as you became more aware of it, your perception changed over time. You thought that it would sort of remain outside of the marketplace and not necessarily see it in the marketplace, which links to the next part of within the legal profession, which is where you currently reside. There's 44% of the legal profession is women. However, at the lake, in the At the Lake conversation, you said that it's still actually seen as quite a male-dominated industry. And so maybe just sort of unpacking some of that, even though the ratio of women to men is almost 50-50. And so, you know, how does that sort of play out for you where it's still seen as quite a male-dominated space? And then linking lastly to sort of the career choices women make. So how does some of this in this perception, worldviews, the way you've grown up, even when you enter into an industry and you perceive the industry differently to what you possibly expected, how is this influencing just the way that people are engaging or choosing career choices, specifically in Kenya? Because you're obviously based in Kenya, so you can speak from your perspective there. Maybe if you can build up sort of some of that understanding for us from your last conversation.
Absolutely. So yes, in Kenya, we do have that nominal equality, you know, 44% of legal professionals are women. I think that number is actually rising. We're almost at 50-50. But the thing that is missing is we do not have women in positions that count. And positions that count don't necessarily mean function or seniority. It means being in positions that they can make decisions and influence appropriately and also bring their strengths to bear. And I'll give you an example. So you find that majority of law firms in Kenya are led by men. Of course, the sector is very competitive and the Kenyan society is generally patriarchal. And so it's difficult then for a woman to be able to play that entrepreneurial role unless their risk appetite needs to be extremely high. So in some cases, I mean, in my personal case, I can give you an example. Maybe my risk appetite is not that high. And that already is a barrier that I have to face. And with my limited risk appetite, I have to enter into a marketplace that is significantly male dominated. Of course, due to various reasons, stereotype and that sort of thing. So that's one, you know, kind of issues that women face there. The second is that the type of career or choice of career. I mean, most women in the legal profession in Kenya, once they get into professional work, whether it's, say, within the judiciary or in private sector like myself, they are more likely to be given roles or responsibilities that are considered or deemed to be women, befitting for women. And I'll give you an example. Matters dealing with children, matters dealing with family disputes, and that sort of thing. And not necessarily matters or initiatives that they would have an interest in. So it's more likely, for example, for a man to be given, say, an energy transaction or projects transaction, and the female counterpart or female associate is given a family matter, even if she has no interest. So considering all those challenges, and then as you go up the career ladder, also that's the same time you sort of going up the family ladder, so to speak, in the sense that you settle down at some point, get married, have children. And at that point, a woman has to make very, very difficult decisions. One, do they have the bandwidth to spend significant amount of time at work and be able to do it effectively while still managing their roles and responsibilities at home? And so you find women then having to make sacrifices at that point. And of course, what normally happens is they would have to take care of their family and potentially take up a lesser role or pivot entirely and leave the profession just so that they're able to be there for their family. And so in my mind, there has to be a balance, right? There has to be a way that women can be able to do what is fulfilling for them career-wise, while at the same time being there for their family and playing the roles that they play at home. And so those are challenges that we're still facing. And hopefully with conversations like this, Kerry, there will be some breakthrough in the future.
Absolutely. I think those are such great examples. Thank you, Sylvia, around just practical ways where you see some of those unconscious decisions around these are the kinds of topics that women will naturally work with, and these are the kinds of topics men will naturally work with. And it's often just an assumption. It's a deep down assumption. It's not an intentional division of work. And so just really interesting to start bringing those things into our consciousness. Just like you said right at the beginning, it's the work of actually just starting to realize that some of those things do exist that we haven't necessarily identified before. And so I suppose that brings me to the next question around, you know, we had at the lake, some of the men were asking on the call, you know, if we want to be part of this conversation, we want to be part of empowering women or part of bringing some of these things into not only our own consciousness, but the consciousness of peers and friends. How do they confront the issue of gender bias? You know, is it a matter of them changing the individual behavior or implementing broader system level changes? You know, what can men do that are listening to this podcast, or ladies who want to get their husbands to listen to it? What can they do? And are there any scriptural principles or stories that you can sort of bring alongside to amplify or help us hook this thinking onto?
So my view is it would require both. It would require one, system level changes and direct interventions at that level just because of scale. But underlying that, there has to be that, again, consciousness, right? There has to be a moment in time where at an individual level, everybody reflects, including men, actually both men and women. So I wouldn't even say it's a men's issue only. I had to go through that process. And now I'm at this place, and I believe I still have a lot more to learn. But for men, it's the same thing. They have to sit and understand that, look, there are specific barriers that women face that are unique to them just by virtue of how, you know, society is structured and other factors that relate to it. And then secondly, what can I do at my individual influential level? And so I'll give you an example. So I am a partner at Ashti Value Pit. I do have both male and female employees who report to me. I must understand then what the female employees' challenges and barriers are and support them through that process. And so I do feel that I have an individual duty to the people that I serve to enable them then break those barriers. And it could be very simple things. I mean, things like flexible hours, that's available, issues like providing the right policy environment within the firm to enable them, let's say, access childcare, maternity, etc. And sometimes it's even not that complex. I mean, it could even just be availing to them tools like counseling if they're going through major career or life decision moments, just having that availability and helping them navigate that or mentoring them and that sort of thing. So in my mind, then men should also play that similar role. It may be uncomfortable as you begin, but with time it becomes natural. And that is not to discount the challenges that men go through at work. They do also have the challenges, right? It's just recognizing both and being able to address them effectively. Now, from a divine perspective, Kerry, And it goes back down to where I started off. There's this incredible, quote that I'd like to use for this. And for me, it underpins the significance of women as being an integral part of humanity, okay? By Oswald Chambers. And it says this: all of God's people are ordinary people. All. It doesn't say men are ordinary. It says all of God's people. God's people being both men and women. And all of God's people who are ordinary people have been made extraordinary by the purpose he has given them. And so I think that the role of every Christian is to enable every man or woman to tap into the extraordinary. And the only way they can be able to do it is if they're at a place where they have dignity, they're able to, tap into their God-given gifts, God-given powers, and be able to do what they do best and not have to face the kind of bias that we see in society today.
So good. I love that. It's that whole idea of, God really wants his people to flourish, not necessarily the way that the world sees flourishing, but he wants us to have those restored relationships. That's how he originally formed us, that we had a perfect relationship with him. We were, we had good relationships with one another, within ourselves, and we were content. But with the fall, a lot of those things broke. And so we're on a journey of redemption with God. And so if we can identify some of these things that we can be part of actually redeeming those spaces and restoring those relationships as much as we can on the side of eternity, it's part of just, the bigger design of God showing the magnificence and the fullness of who he is expressed in all people when people really are able to flourish in their gifts and talents. So I love what you just said. Two other things you said that I wanted to just comment on. The one was around, it's not only men that need to work on this consciousness. And so, and that actually as ladies, we've often grown up in a space where we've been taught certain things and led to believe certain things about ourselves. And there's some of that own learning and unlearning that we face too, in trying to understand where we have put our own filters, our own sort of limitations on ourselves. Nobody else has done it to us, but we have almost grown up believing those things. And I remember a really interesting example. The one day I was, we've got a WhatsApp group in our community neighborhood. And there was a WhatsApp post that was rather inappropriate and very, very objectifying of women. And so one of the men actually posted and said, please remove that. That's actually inappropriate. And it's not something that is helpful to joke about. And what was really interesting was that quite a few ladies then commented and actually said to the man who had asked this to be taken down, you really need to just stop being so serious. It was a joke. It was funny. And in that moment, I actually realized exactly what you said, that we so often have grown up believing and being so used to some of the parameters that are around us that we actually almost defend them sometimes. We almost will defend the fact that it's okay to objectify or to stereotype. And it's not only on gender, that's in multiple layers. But I think, in all spheres of life, often we're so used to the status quo that we don't actually realize that we're perpetuating the same cycles accidentally. And then the second thing you said around being conscious in some of the ways that you can assist people in the marketplace. And I love the fact that you said something as simple as counseling. And so we actually have one of my team was having their first child. And there's actually a lady that does counseling specifically in, it's called transition counseling, in transitioning into a new season in your life. And I thought that is such a beautiful thing to be able to actually give that space for somebody to grapple with their own questions as they're transitioning into a new season. But actually, that's probably going to be just as beneficial to men, because there are different seasons men are transitioning into too, be it becoming a father or be it just, a new season in their life because of age or whatever it is. And so how do we actually sometimes think through these things and think about all the people that are in our employ or that we work with? that, you know, this actually translates across gender, across culture. It's really just a posture of how do I love my people the most and unlock the God-given potential in my people as much as possible. So love that. Thank you for those thoughts, Sylvia. So Sylvia, I wanted to jump into the next question, and that's around how do you combat systemic corruption? And is there any guidance that you can give women who find themselves in such practices? And is there also, again, any sort of biblical or any advice that you'd give from like a biblical perspective in this matter?
Yeah, so this is one of the hardest ones to deal with, especially in cultures where corruption has been normalized as part of business. For me, I mean, as a Christian lady in business, I think that the first thing is one to understand the magnitude and know that this is a challenge that has to be dealt with, cannot be dealt with in isolation, but at the same time, appreciate that every individual has a role in combating corruption. And so the first step, of course, is being willing to say no, being willing to walk away and say, I don't need to participate in this in the marketplace. Of course, it's a tough call, and Christians, just like everybody else, do face temptation. But it's one of the things that, in my mind, and in this century, at this point in time, is probably one of the biggest battles that a kingdom business will face on our continent. And so being willing to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to participate. Having said that, you know, there is opportunity as well, okay? There is an opportunity for kingdom business to collaborate and put together opportunities or put together prospects to compete with this interest. And it has worked in countries like mine, where Kerry, for example, you and I, we are kingdom business. We decide we're going to put together our heads together and give our best shot for such a certain opportunity, even if we know that certain forces are working against us or are in competition. And of course, underlying that is, you know, corruption and a certain values erosion or principles erosion that goes against Christian values and Christian principles. And so that's how I view it. And if businesses do then take that step, one, to collaborate so that they are working in concert with each other to overcome these challenges, with time, you're going to see that progress where what is normalized will stop being normalized, right? And of course, it's a hard mountain to move, but it is possible with faith, with absolute faith and deep faith and being resilient and allowing only your values and competencies to move you forward. Now, there are also the issue of corruption is closely tied to livelihoods, right? And being able to do business in an environment where you're able to continue having a livelihood, forget even doing business for the sake of profit of the commercial gain, but to be able to survive, meaning you do not degenerate to a place where you no longer have dignity and you have to survive. You have to then appreciate the magnitude of that problem and look to networks. And over the last few years, Kerry, from where I see, there has been a lot of initiatives by Kingdom Business to put together networks of not just women businesses, both male and female or gender neutral networks or associations of Christian business. And that is where you can sit and explore opportunity and see how to pursue some of these opportunities in the marketplace to overcome some of these barriers. And so, similar to the issue of what can men do, I don't see it as a a problem that can be solved at an individual level. Yet at the same time, everybody has to do their part. Everybody has to live according to Christian principles and Christian values to be able then to move that needle forward.
So good. And Sylvia, tell me, just, you know, bringing us back to the topic that we're talking about women in the marketplace, why specifically would we talk about the role of women in the systemic corruption conversation? Is it because it's, you know, is it more difficult to be heard, or are there other aspects of the systemic corruption that they're facing? Or is it just a rallying cry to all businesses to really just stand up against, all business leaders, I mean, to stand up against systemic corruption?
It is a rallying cry, but I do think women do face their own unique challenges in that context. So when you would be dealing with corruption from a soliciting perspective and that sort of thing, but then also there are other layers of challenges, including sexual harassment that goes with that. You'd also probably be dealing with stereotypes and trying to break that barrier, stereotype barrier. And so by the time a woman is in business in that environment, of course, you can see how you can get very tired out, that you have to cross one barrier after the other. You have to cross the corruption barrier, the stereotype barrier, potential sexual harassment barrier, etc. And so the rallying cry specifically for women is not to tire and look for strength, one of course in God, because that's where you get replenished and you get that spiritual energy to forge on. And it has to be a battle that's fought on a daily basis, right? When you wake up every day and commit to God and ask for that replenishment. And also look for strength in others, look for strength in fellow Christians, in men that you work with who are able to, you can stand on the shoulders, so to speak. I believe it a lot. I stand on the shoulders of men that I'm very proud of. And so understanding that position and the arsenal that you have, the most critical arsenal is God's care and God's love and his spiritual enrichment.
So good. I really love that. It's really finding your strength in God, but also the power of really partnering. It's not about one gender being elevated over another. It's really about working together with the fullness of our gifts and talents to together overcome things like corruption, to be aware of the different challenges that we both face, because there's different challenges that both genders and different cultural groups and different age groups will face in the conversation. But how do we, again, bring it back to that awareness conversation so that we can truly support one another, lift each other's arms up when needed, and together as brothers and sisters in Christ, try and tackle some of these tough things like corruption. So that's really beautiful. Thanks, Sylvia. So my last question to you is around just thinking about competence. And so sometimes when people think about who's competent, be it with who they're working with or who's in their team or who's eligible for promotions or who's listened to in a room, the perception of competence is often rooted in a personal style, sometimes in the way that they communicate or show up, or there's multiple things around perception and how people perceive one another. And some styles of communication or some styles of showing up can be perceived as less effective or less confident. And so how can we create a culture of learning and understanding to address some of these issues or address some of these things that we possibly unconsciously make assumptions around but aren't necessarily true around competence? And then again, is there anything that you can encourage us with from a scriptural perspective around that?
So the issue of personal style and leadership and that sort of thing, I think there is so much room for kingdom business to be able to take the lead in embracing different styles of leadership. And there's none that is wrong, there's none that is right, right? I know traditionally a more masculine, assertive style of leadership may be seen to be the most effective. But then there are times when that approach is effective and other times when an empathetic approach, a kind approach is what is required, and knowing when to deploy that at a certain point. And so the role I see therefore for women in leadership in business is to appreciate there's a reason why there are different personalities. We are all children of God, right? There's a reason why Carrie was born into this world the way she was born, with a specific disposition. And that is God's gift, and she is meant to nurture that gift to give back to humanity. And so if business leaders then look at these different styles in terms of strengths generally and not weaknesses, and know when to deploy a specific type of skill set or a specific type of style, then you'll start seeing then the rise of women leaders, right? And we have seen, I mean, there's so much detail on this career around which style is used best, why having women in leadership positions is good for business. But for me, the anchor there for Kingdom business is that, all people are extraordinary people, including women, including the unique features that they have, with empathy, leading with femininity, leading with kindness. And it is time that Christian businesses then look to that strength and also see role models within the Bible that did embody that kind of some of those traits, including Jesus, the Son of Christ. I mean, he did have qualities that are really, really, would be viewed as, feminine within the context that we have here, the empathy and that sort of thing, and take that and nurture it and cherish it to allow for growth, for impact as well, not just grace, but also impact from a kingdom perspective.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, if I think, I love what you're saying around too, that people are quite unique. I mean, we're all extraordinary, and Jesus himself was really empathetic. And so sometimes it's surprising when a male leader is incredibly empathetic, but it's actually really beautiful because it's embodying a characteristic of Christ. When a woman is an empathetic leader, it's not a surprise. But when a woman is a strong leader, sometimes it's a surprise. And there's actually beauty in that too. I mean, if you think of Deborah, she was a strong leader, led an army, in partnership with Barak, right? So in partnership with someone. And so there's this beautiful, just unlocking of what God has deposited in us, that we don't need to try and be something we're not. And I think that's sometimes the challenge that women face is maybe if you are in business, you feel like you need to be strong and have your voice heard and really push yourself into the conversation. But actually, we can be fully, fully how God created us and still hold the authority because he resides in us, still hold the sort of gifts and talents that he's given us, and really bring ourselves in our fullness to the table and not feel like we have to be something we're not. But I think as much the conversation is for men in the room, that they can also bring their empathetic side as well as their strong side. Women can bring their empathetic side and their stronger side. We all have all facets of those characteristics. And so how do we normalize that and not have stereotypes of what each person's natural tendency is? And obviously we're all a work in progress and we all have imperfections and things that we need to work on, but there's also incredible beauty locked up inside us. So I love what you said about that, that we are just extraordinary humans, all of us. And so how do we unlock that great potential? So I think a lot of what I've heard from you today is around being intentional around consciousness. And then secondly, just a deep revelation and deep conviction around the fact that we are image bearers and that all of us hold aspects of God locked up inside us. And how do we love one another enough to actually, and be curious enough to figure out how to unlock that full potential that God put in us and not accidentally stifle one another in the process? Sylvia, any last thoughts, comments that you're wanting to leave with our listeners before we say thank you and goodbye?
Thank you, Kerry. Just a reminder to everybody that women are beloved children of God, doing God's work. And I'm hoping this is the start of many great conversations around women's work in the marketplace.
Wow. Thank you, Sylvia. Well, thank you for being part of the pioneers with us in having these conversations and having the real conversations about some of the things that you have faced in your journey in the marketplace as a woman, but also being courageous enough to speak up about, just your kingdom perspective and just how God has really positioned all of us to be part of his bigger narrative and to glorify his name. So thank you for spending time with us today. It's been incredible having this conversation with you and look forward to many more conversations. And keep well and
thank you, Kerry.
Again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sylvia.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. Ziwani is a Mergon initiative. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.